As it turned out, Laszlo Ballo was another strange character. Howard Hartman's wife had long since decided that Laszlo Ballo was a charming snake, but Hartman was more understanding. After all, he had known Ballo for nearly 20 years, and had even hired the Hungarian émigré at his small geological surveying firm in Pittsburgh. The 37-year-old Ballo had immigrated to the United States in 1959, settled with his family in Pittsburgh, attended local technical schools, and through the 60s and 70s worked at local firms as an engineering technician. The attributes Mrs. Hartman thought unsavory, Hartman decided, had more to do with Laszlo's other life. Laszlo Janosch Ballo had always cultivated an aura of mystery. When Hartman hired Ballo as an $8-an-hour technician in 1984, the tall, dark-haired Hungarian, who bore a slight resemblance to Omar Sharif, told Hartman that there would be periods when, because of his work for the U.S. government, he would have to leave town for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. Laszlo's resume stated that, from 1966 to 1985, he worked for the FBI and the CIA as a consultant on counterintelligence. Hartman already knew a little bit about Laszlo's other life. A year earlier, Laszlo had been in the Pittsburgh newspapers when he blew the whistle on former associates who had been planning to sell millions of dollars worth of stolen computer parts to Soviet agents in Mexico. The suspect's defense attorneys had disputed Ballo's credibility and accused him in turn of stealing diamonds. The three defendants in the illegal exports case said Ballo had boasted to them of being a CIA hitman, a black belt in karate, and a bodyguard for 2 Kuwaiti princesses. Laszlo also had his own small firm called Triam International, which provided security and surveillance services. Triam had European connections, Laszlo told Hartman, so he would be making occasional calls overseas from Hartman's business telephone, but he would promptly pay the firm's bookkeeper for the calls. Laszlo also hired Hartman's daughter, Linda, to type occasional letters for Triam. Laszlo promised that he would conduct all of his own work outside of normal office hours. The arrangement seemed perfectly acceptable to Hartman. Ballo was a hard worker and competent technician. As long as Laszlo was working in the interests of the U.S. government, Hartman saw no reason to object to the unconventional arrangement. Hartman had only one stipulation for Ballo. "I don't want anything that would bring any discredit to my firm," Hartman warned. "Oh, that's no problem at all," Ballo responded. Hartman had trouble figuring this complex character out. Why would he work for so little pay when his other life offered so much excitement and material reward? "There's only so much excitement I can take," Laszlo responded. He told Hartman that he didn't much care about the money, and he just wanted to keep a low profile. Vagueness was the essence of Ballo's life. He never invited colleagues to his house in a middle-class neighborhood of Pittsburgh where he lived with his wife and 3 daughters. As far as anyone could tell, Laszlo always carried a gun, either in a shoulder holster under his suit jacket or strapped to his ankle. But when Hartman asked him about it, his response was terse. "Packing a rod, Laz?" Hartman once teased. "Yep, always," was the only response. And whatever Ballo was doing for the government had its material rewards. He owned 2 Mercedes and a Jaguar, and he dressed in tasteful, expensive clothing. When asked a question about anything personal, he responded in the most circumspect of terms. His refusal to answer directly the most straightforward questions even started carrying over into his work at the firm. If Hartman asked Ballo whether he had performed a certain calculation, hoping for a simple yes or no, he got a convoluted and confusing response instead. There was also something slightly cartoonish about Ballo, an awkwardness that, together with his secret life, put Hartman in mind of actor Peter Sellers' Inspector Clouseau, smooth and charming in some ways, clumsy and foolish in others. Once, for example, when Hartman was suffering a former client who refused to pay his bill, he sent Laszlo out to have a talk with the delinquent customer. A tape recorder was hidden beneath Laszlo's coat. In the middle of the conversation, the microcassette came to the end and the recorder shut off with a piercing electronic tone. There were some people who mistrusted Laszlo, and they told Hartman to watch himself. They were sure he was involved in shady activities, but no one ever had a scrap of evidence. When Hartman got curious enough to ask a friend who was a police sergeant to run a search on Laszlo, it came up completely clean. Perhaps too clean, the sergeant told Hartman. Someone could be protecting Laszlo. When Hartman got a subpoena for his telephone bills in February of 1987, Laszlo was the first reason to come to Hartman's mind, and the federal prosecutor in charge of the investigation confirmed his suspicions. It's not you we're looking at. It's an employee of yours, Laszlo Below, the prosecutor said. He added that he would probably call him again for Laszlo's personnel file, but he never did. In early 1988, Laszlo went to work for another engineering firm in the area. In April, when news about West Germans and a mysterious letter to Berkeley Research Laboratory surfaced, Hartman maintained his loyalty to Laszlo. Below told one newspaper reporter who tracked him down in Pittsburgh that he had been answering an advertisement in a trade magazine when he wrote the letter to LBL. He told the newspaper that he had been a consultant to the FBI since 1966, and that he worked as a weapons broker to such countries as South Africa and Saudi Arabia. Despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary, Hartman wanted to continue to believe that the matter had something to do with Laszlo's work for the U.S. government, and that as long as he was working for the right side, he deserved some support. When reporters found Hartman and started asking him questions, he would say only that Laszlo had been an excellent employee. Laszlo called him to thank him for his loyalty. "You're a true friend," Laszlo said. "Well, Laszlo," Hartman replied, "I couldn't discuss things I had no absolute knowledge about. The only thing I know for certain is that you are definitely unique." Nonetheless, the incident with the letter had piqued Hartman's curiosity sufficiently that he asked his daughter about it. She had typed about 10 of Laszlo's business letters on Triam letterhead, and she remembered having typed the letter to Barbara Sherwin at LBL, but she couldn't recall much beyond that. "Do you remember what material you were referring to when you were typing out the request for specific information?" Hartman asked his daughter. She thought about it. "I think it was a magazine," she responded, but she couldn't be sure. Laszlo took lots of material from magazines. It wasn't until Hartman stumbled upon what he considered to be a strong link between Laszlo and a theft of equipment from Hartman's firm 2 years earlier that Hartman realized just how elastic Laszlo's loyalties may have been. Now he wanted to find out all that he could about Laszlo's side work. But when he had his lawyer call the assistant U.S. attorney who had once asked for the phone bills, the attorney would only say that the case was still under investigation. The finer points of Laszlo's life didn't matter much to Cliff Stoll. The very appearance of a letter from someone with what appeared to be shifting allegiances was enough to convince Stoll that there was something strange going on. If what Laszlo had told reporters was true, that he was an FBI operative, then what was Laszlo doing responding to a notice that only the hacker could have seen and presumably delivered to the Soviets? After that one brief interview, Laszlo disappeared, and the FBI maintained a curious silence on the subject of Laszlo Below. Everyone had a theory, but no one would ever know for certain how much of what was said about Laszlo was true, and how he found out about SDINet. His links to the hacker who had been in the LBL computers were never fully explained, and the only clue to what he was doing was on Hartman's telephone bills. On April 21, 1987, the same day Laszlo wrote the SDINet letter, he made several calls to Bonn, West Germany, to a residence near the American Embassy.